Even the judgments which are passed upon the dream as it is remembered after awakening, and the feelings which are aroused by the reproduction of the dream, belong in good part to the latent dream content, and must be fitted into their place in the interpretation of the dream. 1. A striking example of this I have already given. A female patient does not wish to relate her dream because it is too vague. She has seen a person in the dream and does not know whether it is her husband or her father. Then follows a second dream fragment, in which there occurs a manure can, which gives rise to the following reminiscence. As a young housewife, she once jokingly declared in the presence of a young relative who frequented the house that her next care would be to procure a new manure can. The next morning one was sent to her, but it was filled with lilies of the valley. This part of the dream served to represent the saying, "Not grown on your own manure." When we complete the analysis, we find that in the dream thoughts it is a matter of the after-effects of a story heard in youth, to the effect that a girl had given birth to a child concerning whom it was not clear who was the real father. The dream representation here goes over into the waking thought, and allows one element of the dream thoughts to be represented by a judgment expressed in the waking state upon the whole dream. 2. A similar case. One of my patients has a dream which seems interesting to him, for he says to himself immediately after awakening, "I must tell that to the doctor." The dream is analyzed and shows the most distinct allusion to an affair in which he had become involved during the treatment, and of which he had decided to tell me nothing. 3. Here is a third example from my own experience. I go to the hospital with P through a region in which houses and gardens occur. With this comes the idea that I have already seen this region in dreams several times. I do not know my way very well. P shows me a way which leads through a corner to a restaurant, a room, not a garden. Here I ask for Mrs. Doni, and I hear that she is living in the background in a little room with three children. I go there, and while on the way I meet an indistinct person with my two little girls, whom I take with me after I have stood with them for a while. A kind of reproach against my wife for having left them there. Upon awakening, I feel great satisfaction, the cause for this being the fact that I am now going to learn from the analysis what is meant by the idea, "I have already dreamed of that." But the analysis of the dream teaches me nothing on the subject. It only shows me that the satisfaction belongs to the latent dream content, and not to my judgment upon the dream. It is satisfaction over the fact that I have had children by my marriage. P is a person in whose company I walked the path of life for a certain space, but who has since far outdistanced me socially and materially, whose marriage, however, has remained childless. The two occasions for the dream furnishing the proof of this may be found by means of complete analysis. On the previous day I had read in the paper the obituary notice of a certain Mrs. Donna A. Blank Y, out of which I make Donny, who had died in childbirth. I was told by my wife that the dead woman had been nursed by the same midwife she herself had had at the birth of our two youngest boys. The name Donna had caught my attention, for I had recently found it for the first time in an English novel. The other occasion for the dream may be found in the date on which it was dreamed. It was on the night before the birthday of my eldest boy, who, it seems, is poetically gifted. 4. The same satisfaction remained with me after awakening from the absurd dream that my father, after his death, had played a political part among the Magyars, and it is motivated by a continuance of the feeling which accompanied the last sentence of the dream. I remember that on his deathbed he looked so much like Garibaldi, and I am glad that it has really come true. Here belongs a forgotten continuation. I can now supply from the analysis what belongs in this gap of the dream. It is the mention of my second boy, to whom I have given the first name of a great historical personage, who attracted me powerfully during my boyhood, especially during my stay in England. I had to wait for a year after making up my mind to use this name, in case the expected child should be a son, and I greeted him with it in high satisfaction as soon as he was born. It is easy to see how the father's lust for greatness is transferred in his thoughts to his children. It will readily be believed that this is one of the ways in which the suppression of this lust which becomes necessary in life is brought about. The little fellow won a place in the text of this dream by virtue of the fact that the same accident, quite pardonable in a child or a dying person, of soiling his clothes had happened to him. With this may be compared the allusion, "Stuhlrichter," judge on the stool bench, i.e. presiding judge, and the wish of the dream, to stand before one's children great and pure. 5. I am now called upon to find expressions of judgment which remain in the dream itself and are not retained in or transferred to our waking thoughts, and I shall consider it a great relief if I may find examples in dreams which have already been cited for other purposes. The dream about Goethe's attacking Mr. M. seems to contain a considerable number of acts of judgment. I try to find some explanation of the chronological relations which seem improbable to me. Does not this look like a critical impulse directed against the nonsensical idea that Goethe should have made a literary attack upon a young man of my acquaintance? It seems plausible to me that he was 18 years old. That sounds quite like the result of a dull-witted calculation, and I do not know exactly what year it is, would be an example of uncertainty or doubt in the dream. But I know from analysis that these acts of judgment, which seem to have been performed in the dream for the first time, admit to a different construction, in the light of which they become indispensable for interpreting the dream, and at the same time every absurdity is avoided. With the sentence, "I try to find some explanation of the chronological relations," I put myself in the place of my friend, who is actually trying to explain the chronological relations of life. The sentence then loses its significance as a judgment that objects to the nonsense of the previous sentences. The interposition, "which seems improbable to me," belongs to the subsequent, "it seems plausible to me." In about the same words I had answered the lady who told me the story of her brother's illness. It seems improbable to me that the cry of "nature, nature," had anything to do with Goethe. It appears much more plausible that it had the sexual significance which is known to you. To be sure, a judgment has been passed here, not, however, in the dream, but in reality, on an occasion which is remembered and utilized by the dream thoughts. The dream content appropriates this judgment like any other fragment of the dream thoughts. The numeral 18, with which the judgment in the dream is meaninglessly connected, still preserves a trace of the context from which the real judgment was torn. Finally, "I am not certain what year it is," is intended for nothing else than to carry out my identification with the paralytic in the examination of whom this point of confirmation had actually been established. In the solution of these apparent acts of judgment in the dream, it may be well to call attention to the rule of interpretation which says that the coherence which is fabricated in the dream between its constituent parts is to be disregarded as specious and unessential, and that every dream element must be taken by itself and traced to its source. The dream is a conglomeration which is to be broken up into its elements for the purposes of investigation. But other circumstances call our attention to the fact that a psychic force is expressed in dreams